The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy. Cornmeal for tough-to-treat nail fungus. Question. Sandal weather is here, so I'm trying to treat my toenail fungus. I have been rubbing Vicks Vapor Rub all over my two big toenails and wrapping them in bandages for more than a month now. The toenail on my right foot has a new nail growing under it. The left one is showing slight yellowing on one side. This morning, I poured cornmeal right out of the box into a shallow plastic tub and buried my feet in it. I felt like I was at a sandy beach. After watching TV and surfing the internet for an hour, I brushed most of the cornmeal off, but I left the powdery stuff on my toes. I put on fresh socks, sprinkled more cornmeal in my new walking shoes, and walked the dog. I got home, I forgot all about my toenails. Later, I felt a snag in my sock and took my sock off, and the top old dead nail just fell off. No pain, nothing. The new nail looks pretty good. I was surprised it worked this fast. My expectation was that I would use this method for several weeks before seeing any results. I think different methods work because there are different types of toenail fungus. I will keep soaking my feet in dry cornmeal and sprinkling it in any shoes I'm wearing. It worked for me. My feet feel soft, too. Answer. We appreciate your success story, although it is somewhat surprising. Other readers who have used cornmeal to treat nail fungus have made it into a warm mush first. One person wrote, to make the cornmeal soak, just put about an inch of cornmeal in a shallow container that will just fit the affected foot. Carefully pour about an inch of warm, not hot, water on top of the cornmeal and let it sit for an hour so the water and cornmeal can combine naturally. After an hour, add enough additional warm water to cover the foot and soak for an hour. The mush must cover the whole area, not just the toenails, because fungus thrives everywhere on the toes, especially between them. After an hour, rinse the mush off with warm water and pat the foot dry with a clean towel. Soak the toenails once a week until the fungus clears up. Possibly your weeks of diligent Vicks Vapor Rub application contributed to the infected nail coming off so easily. Some people find this alarming, and not all fungus-infected toenails respond in this way. Should you take aspirin for a heart attack? Question. My doctor told me to stop taking baby aspirin daily to prevent heart disease. Years ago, I heard a recommendation to take aspirin while waiting for the ambulance if you felt you were having a heart attack or stroke. Is that still legitimate advice? Answer. Anyone who suspects he or she is having a heart attack should call 911 immediately. Although there is controversy about aspirin as a daily preventive measure, the advice to chew an aspirin tablet while waiting the ambulance still seems valid, and it's cited in the Western Journal of Emergency Medicine, December 2015, and Emergency Medicine Journal, November 2015. Anyone who suspects a stroke, however, should avoid taking aspirin. In such a situation, it could make a bleeding stroke worse. Emergency physicians will determine the type of stroke before deciding on the appropriate treatment. Question. I've accidentally found a way to get off of acid-suppressing drugs without having rebound reflux. I've been taking heartburn medicines for decades, ever since cimetidine first came out. Later, I started taking omeprazole or esomeprazole. Whenever I tried to stop taking these drugs, I got horrible heartburn. This time, I discovered by accident how to get off them. I've been trying to lose weight, so I've gone low-carb. I eat just one meal a day because I've heard that intermittent fasting is helpful. A week ago, I decided to try once again not taking daily medication to control my incessant heartburn. I stocked up on Tums and other antacids because I knew I would be in trouble once I stopped. Then I took my last omeprazole and waited for the flames to appear in my chest. About 15 hours passed, and I started to feel a little heartburn coming. I took a Tums and waited for the next round. I'm still waiting. It's now a week later, and I've not had any heartburn. I should be in agony, but I'm completely heartburn-free. I feel like singing. I hope this helps others who are addicted to PPIs. The solution is eat one meal a day and fast for 23 hours before you eat again. Stick to low carbs and water. Answer. Research supports your accidental discovery. A very low carbohydrate diet has been shown to help control symptoms of acid reflux, and that's cited in the journal Alimentary Pharmacology and Therapeutics, November 2016, and Digestive Diseases and Sciences, August 2006. We were not able to find research demonstrating that intermittent fasting is helpful for heartburn. Parade Magazine, TLC for your summer, the Cleveland Clinic ophthalmologists answer top eye questions. What sunglasses offer the best eye protection? With summer comes sunshine and exposure to ultraviolet rays and white hot glare, which can cause problems like cataracts and macular degeneration over time. That's why you need a really good pair of sunglasses. When shopping for shades, there are a few things you should keep in mind other than the desire to channel your fave celeb. Look for both UVA and UVB protection. Choose the shades with the highest UVA, UVB protection you can find. The level of protection should be listed on the sunglasses sticker or tag. Select amber or brown lenses. These colors enhance contrast, so you'll be able to see better. Try polarized lenses. These are the best for reducing glare. This is especially important if you have had eye surgery such as LASIK. Optometrists can help you choose the right sunglasses. Don't be afraid to spend a bit more money on a good pair of shades. A little extra protection is worthwhile in the long run. And that's from Rishi Singh, MD. Why does my eye twitch and how do I stop it? Eye twitches are common and typically aren't anything to worry about or to seek medical treatment for. The most common culprits are stress and fatigue, but twitches can also be caused by the eye strain, eye irritation, certain medications, or caffeine. Getting more rest, including stress and cutting out caffeine, or reducing stress and cutting out caffeine will likely resolve the problem. Drops may also help. If your twitch is accompanied by redness in your eyes, light sensitivity, or any changes in your vision, see your eye doctor to rule out a more serious issue. And that's from Allison Babiuch, MD, from the Cleveland Clinic. Is it bad to sleep in my contacts? Sleeping in lenses was the most common offense reported by people who wear contacts, according to a new report released by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Other bad habits include swimming in lenses or waiting too long to replace them. Sleeping in daily wear contacts does increase your risk for eye infections. It could also cause problems with your cornea, the surface of your eye. Even if your contact lenses are approved for overnight wear, it's important to give your eyes a break and let the cornea breathe. Here are some other tips to reduce your risk of developing an eye infection. Always wash hands with soap and water before handling contact lenses. Don't use anything other than contact lens solution to wash and rinse lenses. Replace your contact lens case every 3 to 4 months to reduce bacteria. Finally, store lenses in a clean case with fresh solution each day. If you experience vision problems, redness, watering, or discharge, you may have an infection. If removing a lens doesn't help the irritation, call your eye doctor Don't forget to bring the offending lens to the appointment with you. If we do see signs of an infection, we can culture the contact lens itself to get more information about how best to treat it. ABMD. Why are my eyes crusty in the morning? The sleep, quote-unquote, in your eyes is a mixture of the oil, mucus, and dead cells that your eye has produced overnight. Your eyes constantly make the stuff, and every blink flushes it out along with irritants such as stray eyelashes or specks of dust or dirt. When you're sleeping, your eyes continue to manufacture tears and mucus, but because you're not blinking, the excess matter gathers in the corners of your eyes and in your eyelashes. A small amount of clear or whitish eye discharge in the morning typically is not a reason for concern. Use a washcloth with warm water to loosen and then remove it. You can prevent excessive eye gunk by removing makeup before going to sleep and refraining from touching your face, eyelids, and eyes throughout the day. Amy Harbor, MD. Finally, are pool and lake water bad for my eyes? Chlorine keeps water clean and safe, but it sometimes makes eyes red, watery, and sensitive to light for a couple of hours after you are in the pool. The best way to ease the pain is to flush your eyes with cool, clean water or a saline solution and wear swim goggles. Lakes and pond water can contain bacteria and other organisms, including Acantha amoeba, which can cause visual impairment or even blindness if left untreated. Contact lens wearers are more susceptible. Remove your contacts and wash out your eyes after swimming. Richard Gans, MD. Now from the Harvard Health Letter, keeping your weight stable in older age. How to gain weight safely when you're down a few pounds. You spent your whole life trying to keep extra pounds off. Now your doctor says you actually need to gain a few pounds to stay healthy. But healthy weight gain isn't so simple. Some people find it difficult to add enough calories to the usual diet. It takes a lot of effort, says registered dietitian Kathy McManus, who is the director of the Department of Nutrition at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Where to begin? A dietitian can help you come up with an eating plan based on your specific calorie needs. It starts with understanding how quickly you've lost weight and why. Your age, size, activity, amount of weight loss, and overall health will be key to designing a diet that's right for you. Meal structure is also important. McManus says eating many meals throughout the day is better than relying on a large feast or large feasts. If you've lost weight, you're used to eating a lower volume of food, and you get fuller faster. It's better to spread several 300-calorie meals throughout the day than dump 900 calories at dinner. What if you're not up to eating a mini meal at some point during the day? Have a protein drink. It could be something you make at home or something ready-made that you buy. If it's ready-made, you'll want to drink it with about 10 to 20 grams of protein per 8-ounce serving and as little added sugar as possible. If sugar is the first or second ingredient, there's probably a healthier option. The best foods to eat. McManus steers people toward nutrient-dense foods with the most nutrition bang for the buck. They have lots of vitamins, minerals, fiber, lean protein, or unsaturated fat. For example, a slice of white bread has about 70 calories, but very few vitamins and minerals. However, one slice of whole wheat bread has about 70 calories, plus four times the amount of potassium and magnesium and three times the zinc. Other examples of nutrient-dense foods, green leafy vegetables such as kale and spinach, fruits, berries, apples, whole grains, oatmeal, quinoa, beans and lentils, lean protein, fish, poultry, lean meat, dairy foods, low-fat milk, cheese, or yogurt, and unsaturated fats, nuts, seeds, avocado. Making it work. Don't worry about counting grams of nutrients. Just aim for a balance of healthy carbohydrates, unsaturated fats, and protein. Also, power-packing each mini meal with as many nutrient-dense foods as possible. Examples include oatmeal with berries and walnuts, a salad with spinach, tomatoes, cheese, black beans, shelled sunflower seeds, and avocado dressing, or brown rice with raisins, almonds, chicken chunks, and asparagus pieces. For something simple, try scrambled eggs with cheese or whole wheat crackers with peanut butter. Eating this way throughout the day will help you regain the weight you've lost. I look to see 2 to 3 pounds per month if they're going in the right direction. It won't be faster than that. You have to hang in there and be consistent over time. Slow and steady wins the race. Why are you underweight? There are many reasons for weight loss in our older years. Unless it's because someone is dieting, weight loss is a cause for concern, especially if the person has lost 10% of their prior body weight, says Dr. Suzanne Salomon, Associate Chief of Gerontology at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Sometimes weight loss results from a lifestyle change, like the loss of a loved one or a loss of independence. You may be depressed and lose interest in eating, or you may have to cut back on food because of a tight budget. Usually weight loss suggests an underlying health condition such as an overactive thyroid, depression, cancer, or dementia that causes people to forget to eat or shop for food. Other possible causes of weight loss: a recent hospitalization, a loss of taste or smell due to Parkinson's disease or another condition, medication side effects such as nausea, diarrhea, decreased appetite, dental problems that cause difficulty chewing, infections such as pneumonia or skin infections, and disability or pain that makes it hard to prepare food for yourself. You're considered underweight if your BME score is less than 18.5. Whatever the reason, weight loss increases the risk for malnutrition, insufficient calories, protein, vitamins, and minerals you need to function properly. Tips for better bowel control. Try simple measures first, like using a fiber supplement and treating underlying conditions. Nobody wants to talk about or even imagine it, but loss of bowel control, known as fecal incontinence, is a problem for millions of adults in the United States, especially women. It becomes more common with age. It's socially isolating and takes away your dignity. You live in fear that you have stool in your pants and people can smell it. Some people won't even tell their doctors about it, says Dr. Kyle Stoller, a gastroenterologist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Symptoms and causes. Feces can leak out of the rectum accidentally, in liquid form or as solid stool, for a number of reasons. One is that age tends to weaken muscles, including the anal sphincter, the muscle that holds in feces until you're ready for bowel movement. Damage to nerves or muscles can also lead to fecal incontinence. You may experience damage from rectal surgery, inflammatory bowel disease, multiple sclerosis, stroke, childbirth, or diabetes, for example. Fecal incontinence can be an effect of chronic diarrhea from conditions such as irritable bowel disease. Impacted stool due to constipation can also cause fecal incontinence. And sometimes fecal incontinence is the result of an attempt to thwart constipation. Older people frequently take laxatives and stool softeners because they're worried about constipation. That creates loose stool. If age has weakened the muscles of the anal sphincter, fecal incontinence can occur, says Dr. Jennifer Irani, a gastrointestinal surgeon at Harvard. Try this at home. Both experts suggest trying simple fixes for fecal incontinence before seeking treatment from a doctor. You can cut back on stool softeners and laxatives if those are causing the problem, or you can bulk up your stool so it's easier to hold on to with an over-the-counter fiber capsule or powder that you can add to a drink or food. Examples include Metamucil, Citracell, Fibercon, or Benefiber. Fiber won't constipate you, Dr. Irani says. The rectum is smart and can sense bulkiness. When you have more sensation, you have more time to go to the bathroom. You can also try bulking your stool with dietary fiber. Legumes such as beans and lentils are a go-to source. For example, a cup of canned low-sodium black beans has about 17 grams of fiber. A cup of cooked lentils has about 16 grams of fiber. Taking a non-prescription anti-diarrhea medication such as Imodium can work if you have incontinence with diarrhea. It's okay to take it every day under supervision, but it won't work if you have a weakened sphincter. Pelvic floor exercises, the Kegel, K-E-G-E-L exercises, may also help reduce fecal incontinence. These involve contracting or squeezing the anal sphincter several times per day or whenever you feel fullness in the rectum. Pelvic floor physical therapy will help, but it won't always solve the problem. Also, you have to do the exercises every day or it doesn't work. Pads that you tuck into your underwear or adult diapers can offer security when you have fecal incontinence, but pads and diapers can irritate the skin, as can a bowel movement that's been near your skin for too long. Using a barrier cream such as zinc oxide can help protect the skin. Dietary fiber linked to a lower risk for fecal incontinence. When fecal incontinence strikes, increasing your dietary fiber with foods like legumes can get you back to normal. And a Harvard-led study published last year in the journal Gastroenterology suggests that eating a high-fiber diet over the long term is associated with a lower risk for developing fecal incontinence in older women. Researchers looked at questionnaire responses from more than 58,000 women who were followed for more than 20 years. Women in the study who ate the most fiber, 25 grams per day, had an 18% lower risk for fecal incontinence compared with women who ate the least amount of fiber, or 13.5 grams per day. The study is observational and doesn't prove that eating fiber prevents fecal incontinence, but it's reasonable that it should. There are many reasons why fiber can be helpful. It may help ward off heart disease and diabetes. A reduced risk for fecal incontinence adds another potential benefit. Using mind over matter to treat chronic pain. Many people use psychological techniques to help them cope with chronic pain. But which approach is best? A study published January 31, 2019 in the journal Evidence-Based Mental Health offers insight. Researchers analyzed 21 randomized studies focusing on the effect of either cognitive behavior therapy, CBT, or redirect pain-related thoughts and behaviors, or mindfulness-based stress reduction, or MBSR, combining yoga and meditation to build awareness and acceptance of moment-to-moment experiences, including pain. The result, there was no clear winner. Both approaches reduced pain and depression and improved physical functioning compared with the usual care or no care. The authors say that the findings are important since cognitive behavior therapy, or CBT, is considered the go-to psychological technique for chronic pain, but the mindfulness-based stress reduction should be considered as an additional tool, they suggest. Want to try it? Many hospitals, universities, and meditation centers offer MBSR programs. You can also search for MBSR videos and classes online. Interrupt your sitting time to ward off heart disease. There's a silver lining in a recent study that found older women who were sedentary for long chunks of time had a much higher risk for developing cardiovascular disease than women who sat less. The observational study, published February 22, 2019, in the journal Circulation, analyzed activity patterns of more than 5,000 older women, ages 63 to 97, for a week, and then followed them for another 5 years. Both the total time spent sitting each day and the duration of each period of inactivity was measured with fitness trackers. The key finding, an additional hour of total sedentary time was associated with a 12% higher risk for cardiovascular disease during the follow-up period, and when that sitting time was made up of a long uninterrupted sedentary sessions, the risk was far higher, as much as 54%, than when it was accumulated in short, regularly interrupted bouts of sedentary time. The silver lining, reducing sedentary time by an hour per day was linked to a 12% lower risk for cardiovascular disease and a 26% lower risk for developing heart disease during the study period. Even better, researchers say that 1 hour reduction each day doesn't have to be accumulated at one time. The moment spent jumping up to get a glass of water, running out to your mailbox, or darting across the house to get the phone call can all add up. The key is to interrupt your sitting time with activity that will get your heart and lungs pumping. Second opinion from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. I keep hearing about CBD oil. Is it safe to try? Cannabidiol oil, or CBD, is popular for symptom relief in a number of ailments. While it's mostly considered safe, it's not without risks. CBD is a chemical derived from cannabis, sativa, or marijuana. CBD contains little or no delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana that produces a high. The usual CBD formulation is oil, but CBD is also sold as an extract, vaporized liquid, or oil-based capsule. Reported uses for CBD include relief from physical discomfort or chronic pain, involuntary movements related to conditions such as amyotrophic lateral sclerosis and multiple sclerosis, insomnia, symptoms associated with mental health conditions such as anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and social phobia. While it's generally well tolerated, CBD can cause side effects such as dry mouth, diarrhea, reduced appetite, drowsiness, and fatigue. CBD can also interact with other medications you're taking, such as blood thinners. Another cause for concern is the unreliability of the purity and dose of CBD in products since they aren't regulated. CBD products can also be quite expensive. The only CBD product approved by the Food and Drug Administration is a prescription oil called Epidiolex. It's spelled E-P-I-D-I-O-L-E-X, Epidiolex. It's approved to treat two types of epilepsy. Aside from Epidiolex, state laws on CBD vary. Some states place specific medical restrictions on who can purchase CBD products, while other states may allow people to obtain them openly at a dispensary or store. If you plan to try products containing CBD, talk to your doctor about the benefits and risks. CBD oil isn't a solution on its own and shouldn't replace other recommended therapies. However, for some people, it may be part of a comprehensive symptom management strategy. So we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.